This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 9th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday evening is my buddy Jim Allen. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's early. It's only 10:30.
I am sleepy. I don't know what's going on today. I'm just run down tired, man. It's been a long week. Been a long year. Been a long life.
It has been. Oh, let's not go there.
All right, let's stick with the week. A long week.
It has. It has. Sunday is tomorrow and whatever. Another work day.
We have a press holiday tomorrow, so that means I'm free to go to Tokyo Dome and try to get some interviews. So that's where I'll be on Sunday. Hopefully I can have a big weekend like I had before. At least get two interviews and knock a couple out with the Bay Stars and maybe one more Yomiuri Giants player. But we've had a lot of Yomiuri guys, I think the most in any particular year this season. So that's good. That is Japan's most popular team. So at least that's what they tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Including the umpires.
We'll get to that one later.
Yes, we will. But before that, on this week's show, we've got Foster Griffin of the Yomiuri Giants. We're going to look at the races, the top performers for August. We talked hitting streaks, a little bit of Roki Sasaki, and we've got a note from Jim about pitch counts. And then if we have time, we'll handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, sorry to surprise everybody, but I was at Tokyo Dome a few weeks ago.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, thank you, Gomer. And yeah, it was fun, and I just got there just in time to catch Foster Griffin, who was one of the three or four people I was trying to get, so that worked out extremely well. I saw him as he was about to go in the dugout. I said, Foster, you got a second? So he graciously came over to the part of the gulag where reporters are allowed to speak without, you know, having their ankles, the shackles on.
It's the bullpen.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
or pig pen.
The camera pit or whatever you call Farver's pit or box or whatever. Anyway, so we chatted and it'd been a year since we talked and it was really informative. And he was informative last year, but this year he's got a whole year under his belt, year and a half under his belt. And you really appreciate, I think you're going to really enjoy this. So let's just listen to Foster Griffin of the Yomiuri Giants.
All right. Well, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast again is Giants lefty Foster Griffin. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wanted to talk in a second year. Mm-hmm. And last year, it seems like all your success early success came against Chunichi.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, you seem to be finding your feet here. And tell us a little bit about your adjustments from first year to second and within this year.
Definitely had to change my approach a little bit because obviously all teams saw me a decent amount last year. So they're kind of, I noticed they've changed their approach a little bit. So I kind of had to change some things as well. I added a slider.
Right.
And then, so that's kind of been helpful. But yeah, I'm not facing, like you said, Chunichi. I faced a lot last year. I've only faced him once so far this year.
Okay.
So getting a little bit more reps against other teams.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously I was thinking about that in relation to some other pitchers. Mm. You know, for a pitcher, it's got to be hard because you're the guy out there. Everybody's working on adjustments for one guy.
Right.
When they're facing a starting pitcher, you got a whole slew of players you got to be ready for. So it's got to be a more of a broad general approach as to a single player approach.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, you can kind of, for me, it's more I'm looking at guys that have had success against me,
mm-hmm.
and trying to see what their approach is and then trying to change my approach against those guys. Because obviously those are the guys that are hurting me.
Right.
I kind of stick to my plan unless it's not working. Right. So against certain guys that have had success against me, I've kind of tried to change it up a little bit.
Okay. Now, I saw you were more – let me ask a difference, because it's hard to tell when people grade your pitches, cutter, slider. Mm. Sometimes it's really a fine line. Mm. Tell me, what was that change? You are still throwing a cutter?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it was more because I couldn't lay my curveball for a strike.
Okay.
So I was having difficulty with the curveball, so – for instance, guys were kind of just sitting fastball cutter.
Right.
So essentially sitting something hard.
Right.
And I could. They were just eliminating my curveball altogether because I wasn't really commanding it. So I added a slider to add something spin-wise that I could get for a strike. So, you know, they'd have to put that into their head as well.
Is it more of an up-and-down slider or more of a sweeper?
It's more of a sweeper, yeah, because okay. I kind of have the small cutter, and then I kind of can expand off of that with the sweeper with more lateral movement.
Okay, and that gives them two different pitches to
correct.
Look at that. Look,
and different velocities as well.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So changing speeds and spin.
Correct.
Okay. Well, now, as a lefty, and typically for most of the right-handed pitchers coming to Japan, the big challenge is what to do with these I don't want to be pejorative, but these small little lefty fast
correct.
Middle infielder, center fielder guys who only want to put the ball into left field
correct.
And between short and third, you got a different problem. You got, you know, it's a different situation for
right.
you. Now, what kind of adjustments have you made there?
You got to throw inside to those guys. Typically, they don't like it in there. So even if it's a ball, they kind of have to, you put that in their head a little
okay.
bit, especially if it comes close to hitting them. Obviously, I'm never trying to hit anybody, but you're at least putting that thought in their head, like, he's not scared to come in here, so I can't just think I'm going to go to left field.
Right.
So if you go in there enough and then you can throw, like, a slider or cutter away, at least it puts that split-second thought in their head that I might be coming in, and then they can't be as confident to just go to left field.
Interesting. So now you just got the right-handers who want to...
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, it depends on the right-handers. Some
sure.
some right-handers are good at going to all fields, and then you have some guys that are dead pull as well. But like I said, that kind of goes into the scouting reports beforehand.
Okay. Well, now this is your second year, and last year you had Hara as the manager, and this year you've got Abe. And Abe was here last year.
Correct.
But what is there a change in the mood at all that you detect? I mean, that's hard because you don't read the paper. You're not reading the papers.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't speak the language or obviously read the papers. For me, from a guy that doesn't speak the language, I kind of just see a little bit of different roster construction.
Okay.
You know, we're kind of moving. We got different catchers in there.
Right.
We got, obviously, we had Ellier and Coco has
sure.
done well from a position player standpoint. We got Keller on the back end of our bullpen.
Right.
I think our bullpen's changed a lot. If
sure.
you kind of look at our roster that we had in our bullpen last year compared to who we have this year, it's different.
Yeah.
So
just as a personal thing, last year what I got was, it's like every time you guys gave up a run in the eighth inning, Hara would come out and say, well, this player's not worthy of playing for me, kind
right
of
yeah
give a little speech, and I don't get that vibe from Abe at all.
Not necessarily. I think you kind of look at the ERAs and the confidence in our bullpen. I don't think he has a reason to say
right.
that, you know what I mean? So I think last year there was just kind of that back end, we were kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, we're throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks kind of
yeah.
thing. And I don't think much sticked last year because it was just guys all over the place. So now we kind of have a pretty good 7, 8, 9 and then
sure.
some lefty and righty specialists as well.
Now, let me ask you to be a scout, which is not your job, but which of the young pitchers on this team do you really like?
Inoue, I think, is going to be an ace of the staff years down the road. I think last year he was just a little bit scared at times.
Sure.
You know, you could kind of sense how nervous he was.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really settled in. I think it was a good idea for them to put him in the long relief role to start this year, let him get his feet wet a little bit more. And he did. He got his feet wet in some games that were maybe carried away already.
Sure.
But he got the experience. And that's what they do in the big leagues. You
sure.
know what I mean? So, and then he slid into that starter role, and he's really taken off. So I think he's going to be a force to be reckoned with for many years here.
Yeah, he certainly got the attitude. I mean, I watch him when he's got runners on base, and
mm-hmm.
he's really dogged.
I think last year you could see his heart rate elevate.
Okay.
You could see him get a little bit, oh, shoot, if I give up runs, I'm going to go back to the second team or whatever. So now he's like, okay, I kind of got a little bit more confidence in myself, and he's got kind of slowed that heartbeat down a little bit with runners on base.
That reminds me of something I read this morning about how a guy who's trying to stick on the first team they said, well, we brought him up and used him as a pinch hitter, but he didn't meet expectations. He struck out. I'm going like, dude, it's one at bat.
Yeah.
But there's that.
That's that expectation level, I think, that they have here. You know, I think that's just part of the winning style. That's just part of the difference between here and back home a little bit is if you get a chance, you got to do your best to take advantage of it early because it may not be here for long.
Well, here, of course, they can send you down and bring you back up.
Many times, correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go up and down 10 times in a year.
Right.
Yep. Okay. So now this team in last year, what's the big difference? You guys are fighting for the pennant.
Mm-hmm.
And last year it was a really tough slog.
Yeah.
What's your appreciation of that situation this year?
It's good. You know, the vibes are good. Obviously, we're fighting back and forth with Hiroshima a little bit to try and get that first place spot with only about 30 or so games to go. So it'll be fun. It'll be a dogfight. I know we got quite a few games to play at their place.
Uh-huh.
So those are going to be crucial coming down the stretch. But I think the energy's high, so it'll be fun.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining
us,
and good luck and good health going forward.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you again, Foster. What a pleasure and an honor that was, and I'm so happy you stopped so the listeners could get your take on things.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you, Jim, for getting the interview. And, yeah, I've seen Foster one day. He was pitching, and I don't know if he's that guy on pitch day or on start day, mm-hmm. but I didn't bother him. I saw him coming into the dugout, and it only took me one time before I stopped bothering pitchers on days that they hit. The only guy so far who has been really friendly, I should say there have been two, Nick Martinez when he was with the Fighters, and he talked to me for about 20 minutes, and then he said, well, got to go back in the back. I'm starting today. And I'm like, oh, dude. And then was Jeremy Beasley of the Hanshin Tigers, who was really
funny. How come that does not surprise me?
Yeah. And
he is Mr. Laid Back, cool as a cucumber. Hey, yeah. He's probably like that on his wedding day. It's like, yeah, I got 5 minutes. I'm good.
Yeah. You want to do a telephone interview? Let's do it. But anyway, I absolutely loved hearing Foster just break down the reason why he added a slider. And then, you know, I love how this new name for sliders that have huge movement now.
The horizontal movement.
Yeah, the sweepers now. And so he said he added a slider, but then later on in the conversation, it became a sweeper. But then he clarified and he said, well, you know, basically it's three pitches. It was like adding three pitches with the slider because he can change speed. So now he's got a hard slider.
Well, the cutter is the hard one. And then the sweeper is the other one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he got me looking for a slider then. He hit me on the back foot.
Okay. That was the backdoor slider to John.
Right. But you hear guys break down the way they pitch to batters and what they're looking at and what they're looking for. And it just gives you really good perspective. And I loved hearing Foster last time, mm-hmm. but I think this time we got a more relaxed version and a more confident version of Foster. Not that he wasn't relaxed or anything. I think he thought he was relaxed last year when he spoke with us. And I'm sure he's always confident, but that kind of came through in this talk a little bit more because he wasn't afraid to tell us, look, I saw guys sitting on my pitches. Now, I don't know, you know, we always talk about proprietary information or we've talked about not asking them too much and trying to expect answers on some of the questions that are not into the weeds, but really into what these guys are doing, what the pit batters are looking for. You know, if a guy's tipping pitches or something, they're not going to tell us that kind of stuff. But I kind of thought we got a little bit of insight when he said, yeah, guys were sitting on my curve, or they were sitting on the fastball
because the curve,
the command on the curve wasn't good yet. And so I'm thinking, well, you know, should you really be telling us this? Should you really be saying it on a show? But I think it ultimately comes to executing your pitches. So it really doesn't matter because I think the other teams know anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know what he throws.
Yep.
They kind of know what to expect. A lot of the teams face a lot of the pitchers all season long. There aren't many surprises. You really just have to execute the pitch and find your location and then also understand what the batters are looking for and try to work off of that and make your adjustments off of that as well. So we heard all those things. And I just thought it was so enlightening and so fantastic to hear all this kinds of information about what the pitchers are doing, how they're making adjustments, and he's making adjustments. And, he talked about the fact that he had seen a lot of Chunichi last season, but he has only pitched him against them once. I thought it was twice, though, but I didn't check on that. But and I kept thinking, gosh, that he should send some champagne to the Dragons for kickstarting his successful season or run in Japan.
Yeah, he won his first two games really well against them.
Yeah, because he really, lo and behold, a lot of it is the Dragons just can't hit that well, but he certainly exacerbated or exploited that fact because he pitched well against them and not just once. And as I believe it was the second time he pitched against them last year or early on, he had a no-hitter going for a little bit. So
something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's great to hear these guys talk about this stuff, and I'm just so glad that he was candid about that. So, yeah, what stood out to you? And I'm sure there was a bunch.
A couple things, and one of them, I think, just to address how you put it, yeah, I felt last year he was saying, this is what I'm bringing, and this is what I'm trying to do, and this is what I'm trying to absorb.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was, this is how I prepared for this. And now his preparation has gone into, he's deep into the weeds there. He's got a lot of data to work with.
Right.
And now he's gone from, this is what I'm trying to do, to this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as you said, that was, because a lot of guys in baseball perpetually live in that, this is what I'm trying to do, when it comes to speaking to the media.
Sure.
They really don't want to get into the details, for whatever reason. And I'm not saying, this is A is better than B, but he did, and it was really fun. And I have to again throw a shout out to Jay Jackson when he was with the Hiroshima Carp for tipping me into that. That slap hitting lefty dynamic that I watched in Japanese baseball for 20 years before I realized it. It wasn't until I went back and sifted through the data and saw that it's almost like they're different. Left-handed, right-handed batters are almost kept in Japan, almost classified as different species. Because long story short, he had told me about it, and as these things usually go, somebody tells you one thing, somebody tells you a little bit more and a little bit more, and it becomes like a jigsaw puzzle. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it falls into place. It fell into place when I was trying to figure out whether Koshien Stadium really hurt left-handers, as they said. And I went, wow, right-handed hitters hit for so much power at Koshien. And then I looked at other parks and I said, wow, right-handed hitters hit for more power everywhere.
Mm.
It's because basically 40% of the left-handed hitters in Japan are little fast guys who aren't trying to hit home runs. Okay, so that was a huge thing. So anyway, I ask about that a lot now, thanks to Jay Jackson with that sort of that breaking the ice for my, I don't know what, addled brain on that one years ago. But anyway, so that his explanation, and I love different pitchers look at that. They attack that problem. They've only got certain tools they can use. They got the pitches that they can command, and they've got the approach that they're comfortable with. And and he really dug into that. I thought that was really illuminating. I would say, and I think I mentioned it last year, that he had talked about his slider, and I saw him really tie up. For the most part, Jose Osuna and Domingo Santana. Domingo Santana did get him in one at bat 2 weeks ago with the Swallows trying to throw these backdoor sliders, but these back foot sliders, which are backdoor sliders actually.
Mm. Do you feel that earthquake?
No, because I was moving.
Oh yeah, we're having a little bit of an earthquake. It's lasting a little bit here, but yeah, I'm good. Wait. Okay, yeah, back foot slider. Go ahead.
Okay, so anyway, that was all fun, and I've really enjoyed watching him pitch and listening to him talk. And I think the listeners will enjoy watching him pitch more now, because we've got that insight into what he's trying to do. And so I just thought that was wonderful. Now, I did ask about the differences with Shinosuke Abe and Tatsunori Hara, not because I thought he would tell me, but on the off chance that he might.
Yeah. And
we still had that one with that wonderful answer from Cody Ponce when I asked him about Tsuyoshi Shinjo. And it's like,
next question.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no problem. Next question. So I am actually keen to ask some of the fighters players about the change Shinjo. But anyway, so moving on, that was that. And I would add that I did look up, now that my pitch database is up and running, if it still looks like it's still a little disorganized, I was able to look up and see that Foster Griffin's was getting strikes with his curveball about as much as everybody else did last year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly, either his expectations were higher or he was not getting the swings he expected to get, which is also very likely because Japanese batters are, again, are different, slightly different creatures.
Well, wouldn't you say both can be true if he doesn't have the command that he wants?
Yes. Absolutely.
That's just the answer. He just didn't have the command he wanted.
Yeah, it could have been lots of things. The ball is different and
slightly softer.
Well, that's issue. That was this year, right? But I'm just saying that it could be a variety of reasons I think your one is the command that he expected was not there. And he perhaps featured his curveball in specific ways that the level of command he had here was not making that a useful part of his approach. Okay. I mean, in Japan, basically, yeah, the first pitch curveball is really a thing. It's a get me over pitch that pretty much every Japanese starter throws once or twice a game.
Mm-hmm.
When they
mm-hmm.
want to
free strikes, anyone free strikes.
Exactly. Yeah, you can get they can get two or three free strikes with a big hanging curve right down the middle that just freezes most batters on the first pitch, especially if they throw hard. But yes.
Seen that a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I one more thing, just hearing him talk about the Giants mentality. Now, he didn't get into it heavily, but we've heard Scott Matheson talk about that as well in the past, that when you join a team like the Giants that expects to win, has a winning culture, puts in the work, they have the mm-hmm. meetings, because apparently all the hitters and pitchers have to run off to these secret meetings right when we want to talk to them, Elier Hernandez. They prepare.
Not to drop names or nothing.
Oh yeah, was the mic on? I didn't think the mic was on.
Well, when you're a superstar,
hashtag high heat.
Yes, but I just think that that mentality with this team is a little bit different. They walk around with a different kind of pride, and they wear it on their sleeves. And the reason they wear it on the sleeves is because they expect the players to live up to it, and they challenge him to do so. And I think that's part of being a winning team is to have that mentality. So I don't mind it, and I think it's part of that organizational DNA that mm-hmm. that comes with it. So that you know, that's part of the DNA that also sanitizes a lot of the comments that we get, and this was not that. And I'm glad. So thank you again to both of you guys.
No, thank you.
All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the league races. So those Giants pulled one out of the hat today, and I shouldn't say that, but they were down to their last strike, had a opportunity in the ninth inning with a runner on, and just a regular old ground ball to third to I don't know who was playing third. I'm assuming it was Shibata or somebody else for the Yokohama DeNA NBA Stars. And I'm looking it up as we talk because it really wasn't that difficult to play. And I believe he was brought in for Toshiro Miyazaki for defensive purposes. So this was the play that he was supposed to make. when you come off the bench, and I know it's difficult and blah blah blah, but he did the difficult part, which was fielding the ball that again wasn't hit that hard, but then bounced the throw to first, and that eventually led to the tying run scoring in the ninth, which eventually led to our buddy Louis Okoye hitting a walk-off home run in the 12th inning, and it was Tatsuhiro Shibata at third. So, and Miyazaki was seen on the bench, clearly not saying these words, but with the facial expression that said, "Well, you see, that's why you should have left me in. I can make the throw. The throwing isn't my problem. I could have made that play." So anyway, so it's almost a daily thing or a weekly thing, I should say, because one team in the Central League has a good week, and then that team finishes the week on top of the standings, and the other team loses a couple three games in a row, and they're closer to third than they are to first. And that's what's happening with the Hiroshima Carp, who bounced back after the weirdest game I've seen in a while, because on Friday night you've got Sawamura Award candidate Daichi Osada versus Takahiro Matsuba, and who has been good against the Carp this season, but not up against very many other teams. And Matsuba shuts him out over six innings and gets the win. And Osada gives up two home runs in the first inning. He hadn't given up two home runs in the season, I don't think. So it was just really weird. Anyway, what are you seeing in the Central League, and how fun is this going to be as we go to the end? This is only week
Yeah.
one of September. It's going to be cool.
No, exactly. I mean, you just never know who's going to beat you. I seem to think it's like the Yakult Swallows is like saying, it's like it seems like they're almost plotting to see who they can really mess up. We're going to play dead here for a couple of days.
They are dead. They're not playing.
Okay, they're not playing. They're living out.
Yes, they're
Yeah, they're
doing
living.
the cicada thing where they're on their backs for a while until you get close and
Exactly,
then they
yeah,
fly
I think
off.
exactly could be. So they're, but you know, and then all of a sudden, like if, what they swept the Giants about 3 weeks ago,
Yes.
and then it's like, and then they go back to hibernation.
Yes. It's
So,
just weird and
well,
wacky.
they got swept by the Tigers. Okay, so anyway, the one of the things, you know, you were talking about Tatsuro Shibata's wild throw to bounced throw to first base, and the one of the things that I have been following when I do my game capsules for my blog is how often a big error costs the Tigers or the Bay Stars, because they're in this race to see who's going to make the most errors in the Central League this year.
Yeah, they're kicking
So
their own butts.
they are indeed. So I am watching that, but that's been you know, so that's been one of the themes in the Central League, at least for me, because those two teams are neck and neck, and we had a lot of neck and neck stuff this week.
We usually do, but yeah, the Central League this week, close games, really exciting series and all those things. But yeah, I think it was last week, and you said you think that the teams that are in the Central League are going to finish in that order. And it was kind of a hot take in the sense that it's so close.
Right.
It's really so close. And the Bay Stars immediately they go on a winning streak and they win five games in a row. They're looking good, six games in a row. They're looking good. And then they have this game today in which, they had opportunities to score more runs and didn't, but they literally threw the game away.
Yep. And well, I mean, it wasn't like I was predicting any team to run away. I had the Carp finishing a half game ahead of the Giants, which is exactly where they were a week ago.
Sure, and nothing's done yet.
Yep.
And we still have a long way to go, especially if they're going to be this close. But I mean, it was a hot take in the sense that anything could change, and it did. But it's not done. It is not done. And like I said before, the teams that lose to these teams that are out of the running really want to kick themselves. And it was the Carp this week that just couldn't put together competent games against teams that are just not in the running. And I mean, I shouldn't say not in the running because the Bay Stars are in the running. They're just outside of the playoff picture right now, and not by a little bit. They were considerably back in the sense that it's hard to make those games up, especially against the team that is the defending champion of the defending Japan Series champion, but also defending league champion, and has a lot of quality players on the team. So it's very hard to come back if you're not going to make the outs that you should. So yes, that was tough. But I mean, every team, every night, it just seems like it's a struggle to get these wins. And Shingo Takatsu, the manager of the Yakult Swallows this week, his team had a 3-run lead, gave up a 3-run home run, I believe it was in the ninth inning, and the score was tied. And the Swallows had this win in the 10th inning against the Giants. I think that was on Tuesday. And afterward, in his comments when he was getting interviewed, he looked exhausted, number one, mentally, the stress of going through just a game like this. And this is a team that's in last place and is out of it. But I guess the pressure that you feel as a last place team to try to get the wins that you're in position to win. And he said, well, I just got a newfound idea of how hard it is just to win one game in this league. And I'm like, you're speaking for yourself, but you're talking about all the teams in this in the Central
Sure.
League.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
No, definitely not.
And so yeah, that was one. And obviously, if you're in the running and you're the Carp or you're the Tigers, and these games mean so much more to you than they do to the teams that just want to get off the field and get back home and have a good night's sleep. Because you're in the running and you can still win the Central League pennant, it has to be twice the pressure, or seemingly twice the pressure and twice the stress. And that's the one good thing about Akinobu Okada. He just doesn't seem like those things bother him. And Shinosuke
Right.
Abe, as much as I like him this year and I like his demeanor in the dugout, even though outwardly he doesn't seem to be angry and having these emotional fits with everything that goes right or goes wrong, mostly wrong, you can see and you can get a sense of how stressful it is for him. He is not relaxed. He is not relaxed on the bench
Yeah,
watching these games.
I wanted to mention when you say that there was, and I think I mentioned this last week with the Rowan Wick Daisuke Miura thing, and I don't
The
know if I,
shot pad.
yeah, the look, and the writer who was talking about how this should be, this should be a lesson. All managers should be should be tough customers with their players and show fire and emotion. And he pointed to Akinobu Okada. I wrote about this on my blog. And it should be like Akinobu Okada, who's an old school guy who doesn't brook any nonsense. But he may look annoyed on the field. And he may say, I'm upset, but he's such a unique manager in Japan, in the sense that he's an old school guy who is such a kind of a humanist. He in that he never he rarely, if ever, rips a player in public. He'll he'll he may he may tell him off behind, behind closed doors. But he may be the least critical manager about his specific individual players to the media in Japan. And I love him. And I think if you play for the Hanshin Tigers, I talked about this last year, that's a huge advantage for a team that lives in a media fishbowl. And so I thought it was funny that he was picking up Okada as the guy who was sort of like the tough as nails, brooking no nonsense, tough guy when he's such a protector of his players. So anyway, so that was that.
So I mean, now we're getting to the season, the month that we get a lot of rainouts. We got makeup dates. We've got open dates. You can mix and match. You can hold guys, and you know, you don't have to go into scramble mode because there aren't a full slate of games each week. They have some open dates, especially when we get toward the end of the month. So you'll see guys pitching. Maybe we would call on short rest, or we'll see guys get skipped in the rotation and all these other things, so that the teams can get their better pitchers out there. But just because the old setup proved to us on Friday, just because you put your ace out there doesn't mean you're going to beat the number six or number seven pitcher for the Dragons. There's no guarantee in this league.
The SoftBank Hawks learned that the other day.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Pacific League and the SoftBank Hawks. And they lost today, and that's a four-game skid. I believe the announcer says their first four-game skid of the season. And we touched on it last week, especially me. I spoke out. I said the Hawks are usually on this freeway to the pennant-winning season, in their pennant-winning seasons, not every year, but they're on this freeway and they're heading toward the title, when all of a sudden the engine clunks, the fuel pump starts to malfunction, and the tires sprout numerous leaks, and you can hear the air coming out of them, and they're limping toward the goal here. And they have their injury excuses as much as any other team. But it's really getting to the point where it's unnerving for, I think, the fans, some of the players, probably the younger ones. And again, they have a lot of young guys who haven't been in this situation, who are expected to be out there every day. And that's going to be new for them. But the confidence equity, let's call it that, the confidence equity they built up.
I like the sound of that.
You like that? Yeah, that they built up in the early part of the season. It starts to, you know, diminish when you can't finish off last place teams, when you have leads late in games and you give them up. And it certainly lets a team like Nippon Ham plant seeds of confidence for themselves that could really grow into a monster when you get to the playoffs. So I really think this is not good. And you sent me a note today in talking about the biggest comeback from, I guess it was, that was Pacific League specifically, or is that?
No, it was in Japan. Japanese,
yeah. Okay. Well,
history was.
You can go ahead and present it here.
Yeah. It was, did I say 13 and a half games?
I think you said
I have to 14 go to my notes. Half. Okay. Yeah. I have to go to my notes here.
Nope. No, I have it in my head. That's okay. You gave me the number. It's in my
head. So
14 and a half.
So I mentioned, I've been thinking about this because in 2016, the Fighters overcame, and the Fighters in June, I think June 18th, were trailing by 11 and a half games. And that had been that was the longest Pacific League, the largest Pacific League comeback since the 1963 Nishitetsu Lions, who overcame a 14 and a half game deficit to win the pennant.
In 1963.
Actually, I said that was since 1950, but actually it was in 1963, and it's the largest in history.
Don't send me bad notes. They stick in my head.
Yeah.
Especially 1950. It's easy to remember.
Yeah, okay. Well, I said since 1950, that was my bad. But anyway, the Fighters on July 1st trailed by 15 games. So they're in, and there are, I can't, can you tell me how many games there are left? I think there are 20.
Yeah, and some teams have about 20, little, maybe it's slightly fewer than 20.
Okay, so as of Sunday night, as of Saturday night,
what day is it?
Yes. Today is Saturday. I know. We usually record on Sunday, so this is confusing as all heck. So, Saturday night, the Fighters and Hawks, one of those teams has 20, the other has 21 games, and they are 7 games apart, which is an awful large mountain to climb, but not an impossible mountain to climb. If they did, it'll be an amazing comeback.
Well, they're on track, and they keep winning, and they're really fun to watch. I mean, it's not appointment viewing for me, but I always want to put the Fighters games on. I love seeing those young players. I talked about that last week as well. Conversely, I'm cringing when I put the Hawks on. Even if they get a lead, I'm like, well, you know, they're playing so poorly right now that everything's going the wrong way. They're running uphill, and the hill is oiled. I don't know how you get that much oil on a hill. It's like the The Floor is Lava TV show, I'm sure you don't know about. But anyway, it's tough. And it just seems like they're fighting themselves. They're fighting the opponents. They're fighting situations. They're battling the umpires. Everything's going against them. And it has to be unnerving. But still, yes, they have this 7-game lead. They have to lose a lot of games to lose this lead, and the Fighters have to win a lot of games to flip it. But it's fun to watch.
It is fun.
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I think the Hawks are going to right the ship.
I think the odds are small. I'd put them in the 5% or less. But
so you're saying blah bitty blah bitty blah. Yeah, I know what you're saying, though.
Yeah, I think that's highly unlikely, but it's still fun to think about.
Hey, it's drama on TV. And then you've got that third place, fourth place fight with the Marines and Eagles, and the Marines clinging, barely holding on, however you want to describe that, and the Eagles scratching and clawing, however you want to describe that. And I keep saying I believe in the Marines. They seem to have more, but they got to go out on the field and prove it. You know, you can't talk about it. You got to be about it. And they're about to be passed instead of being about it. So they lost tonight. I think it was 3 home runs the Eagles hit. Mm. And, you know, they got Takayuki Kishi'd. And, and here's a guy.
Not a lot of people can say that.
Well, because he only has 4 wins, he's got 10 losses. And Kazuya Ojima, he has lost his 10th tonight. So, I mean, they have not proven to be great teams. They're teams that obviously fighting for that last playoff spot. They're fighting to be in position to be playoff fodder, especially, you know, hopefully they won't be. Hopefully for them, they won't be. But I'm looking at their teams. I'm looking at how they can't be consistent. And I'm looking at Ryoki Sasaki, who's going to throw tomorrow. And I'm saying, hey, you know, it's about time you guys put your big boy pants on and win some games. I mean, I've been saying the Eagles are overachieving, but at some point it's going to be, you know what, this is what the Eagles are. And maybe the Marines were the overachieving team and they're falling back to their median or something. I don't know what it is, but they don't look good.
I haven't really seen the Marines as being, really that much better than the Eagles or the Buffaloes for that matter, but the Buffaloes keep finding ways not to win.
Yes, they don't fail when it comes to finding a way to lose. They find that way.
Yeah, they're doggedly determined, it seems. So, and I feel bad for them because I like a lot of the guys, but this is a season that just went to hell really quickly. And
yes, it did.
I think it's now no longer in hell. It's now in purgatory.
Yeah, the flames are real. So, but I'm going to watch that race too. I think that's the bigger, that's the closest race. That's the one that every night, you know, starting if Sasaki doesn't get it done for them tomorrow, they'll be almost in a flat-footed tie. And that's the one that every day. Now the players are not going to be able to lie to us and tell us that they don't look at the standings because they're going to be watching every day. But, I mean, still the job doesn't change. They have to go out and win any particular day. But still, I think they're going to be looking a little bit more than they usually do. Mm. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the top performers of August. And I thought, oh, this is really going to be easy. This is going to be a breeze. And then I couldn't think of some players in a couple instances in the Central League, a pitcher in the Pacific League, a pitcher. But then I looked at the numbers so let's start in the Pacific League because I think that's really, really interesting.
Hmm.
The hitter is obvious. It's Framil Reyes who bashed his way. Do you have the numbers on him? Because I don't have that page.
Yeah, he's led the Pacific League with a 1.2008 OPS and with a 403 batting average. He was second in home runs with 8. He had 23 RBIs, which was tied for second behind Kotaro Kiyomiya.
Yes, teammate. Yes, I gave him an
honorable there were a couple
mention.
Of people who were up there, you know, saying, I'm here too, but no, he's the man.
Yeah. And then I looked at pitcher, and this one is going to be a puzzle. My vote officially is none of the above,
Okay.
because there really wasn't any. The guy who really stood out only has stood out. That's a little bit loose with the language, as they say. But it's Takahisa Hayakawa of Rakuten. He really pitched well. He probably should win the honor, but
Yeah, I think he
he was only
will.
2-0,
Yeah, I
so
know. I
maybe
think
he
he
gets it by
will.
default. Yeah.
I think he will. We're really we've advanced, or the award
Gonna say
selectors.
we.
Well, we, I
Be
mean the
specific.
award selectors have advanced, because I remember in 2000, it might have been 2014 or 15 or 16, when Roki Sasaki, excuse me, well, it was not Roki Sasaki, it was Shohei Ohtani. Was still pitching and pitching for the Nippon Ham Fighters, and he had a month where he was 2-0 with two shutouts in four starts with like a 0.4 ERA. And because he didn't win three games, they gave it to the guy who was 3-1 with a 3.5 ERA.
Let's just turn our brains off and look at
Yeah. I mean, he led the league
the
in strikeouts. He was untouchable, but the Fighters didn't score in two of his games.
numbers. Good grief.
So,
Use part of your brain. Just part. I'm not
exactly.
even
But they have
asking for
gone
all of
off
it.
the, they've gone off the starting pitchers need to win three games truck. We've seen that a few. Kodai Senga won a couple of years ago when I said, well, he deserves it, and he got it, and I was kind of really shocked. So I think it will be Takahisa Hayakawa. He kind of has the best numbers in general. It's not, it's, I wouldn't say he Hayakawa was bad. It's just the wins is the only problem he's lacking, and I think they've kind of gotten over that hurdle. But the 1.0 ERA is really nice.
Yeah, he was good. He was good.
He
All
didn't give
right.
up, and he didn't give up any unearned runs either. So.
And that's big. I know you're saying it like it's a little thing, but I think that's big too,
Oh,
because
sure, it's big
you
because,
have to get those extra outs, and sometimes you have to get them. That's just
yeah.
part of the game.
Yeah, and a lot of unearned runs are
Game changers.
basically, well, not only that, but they're unearned runs because A, let's say that the pitcher fails to get a, misses a ball, or he boots a ball in the infield with two outs and then eight runs score.
Right.
And they're
Wow.
all unearned because he butchered a ball.
Yeah, but I
No,
tend
that
to
happens.
be,
That
I know I'm
happens.
not saying that it doesn't happen. I'm saying you got to get the other guys out too.
No,
So
exactly. The point is,
I
unearned
know.
runs
Give
wouldn't happen. There's no unearned runs that didn't happen without the help of the pitcher.
Sure, because even if, let's say, for instance, you had guys on base and then there was a two out error that allowed all the guys to come in and score who you put on
Oh.
base. Well, then you've put those guys on base. You can't really blame the
Exactly.
error,
Exactly.
or you've
Exactly.
helped contribute to the way they got, especially
You
if you
have to
walk them.
contribute.
So
Yes,
yes, so I
exactly.
understand that, but
Okay.
yeah,
Okay.
it is important. Sometimes you have to get those extra outs. And then
Sure.
so Reyes is the hitter. Maybe Hayakawa the pitcher. So then I went to the Central League, and the first guy I thought of is Hideki Nagaoka of the Yakult Swallows. This guy's been hot. He's been tearing it up. He has to be the man. And then I looked at the numbers, and I'm like, oh yeah, the other Mr. Hitting Streak, Koji Chikamoto of the Tigers. They're close. The batting average with Chikamoto 390 for Nagaoka 384. Nagaoka had more RBIs, but he doesn't bat lead off, so maybe that had something to do with it. Although his team, Nagaoka's team scores a lot of runs, Shikamoto's team really doesn't. So to get 11 RBIs is kind of big. I don't know. So then I look at the OPS, and it's 900 for Chikamoto, it's 934 for Nagaoka. I'm like, yeah, Nagaoka's the guy. He's got to be the guy. So, but he plays for the last place team. And Chikamoto plays for the first place team. So I say they go with the higher batting average and they're going to give it to Chikamoto. What do you say?
Okay, well, I had two guys, and one of
Neither
them
one
is
of
not
these.
Hideki
Oh,
Nagaoka,
okay.
but I did see him there. But
You're like, hi, dude.
my top two are Tyler Austin,
Okay.
who had the top OPS in the Central League and led the league in home runs,
Yep.
and Koji Chikamoto, who led the league in runs and had a 900 OPS, which was, you know,
it's good for him. Yeah.
No, that is very good. Good for him. He led the league with a 470 on base percentage.
I was going to say most of it is on base percentage.
But most of it comes with
who
that
cares? Get your OPS batting average.
exactly. But that's all right because, you know, he did a few other things besides just hit singles. You know, drew his walks, scored his runs, which is his job. So
39 hits. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm either of those two guys for me. I'm Hideki Nagaoka would be fine with me also, but those two guys were the guys that popped out at me.
Okay. And then pitcher. And so I thought, well, you know, there are two guys I couldn't think of, the first guy I thought of was Tomoyuki Sugano of the Giants, because I've been talking about how steady he has been all season. So he's the first guy. But then I remembered that Kazuki Azuma of the DeNA BayStars has put in, I think almost every start, just about every start has been a quality start for him. And he has been just as steady, if not better. So I couldn't decide. So then I looked at the numbers. And maybe Azuma has slightly better numbers, but I'm going to go with Sugano just because he has really bounced back really well. And I think what did you call them before? The committee, the curmudgeon committee or whatever they are. Now that's the Sawamura Award guys, but they're all mixed. They're all old guys to me. So they're probably, curmudgeon committee is probably fine for these guys too.
Yeah.
They're going to go with Sugano as a, I don't know, kind of a lifetime achievement award because he hasn't gotten one in so long, but he really has been steady as well.
No,
what do you have?
I Katsuki Azuma.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's who I would probably choose, but I don't think they're going to choose him.
Well, I don't know. Led the league in ERA. I mean, 3-0, 0.80 whip. Yeah, I'm fine with him.
I'm fine with him.
Yeah, he's my favorite, so I'm gonna stick with him. I think he's the best choice.
All right, I'm gonna say they give it to Sugano. Like I said, lifetime achievement. But I like Azuma.
They do
well.
That sometimes, you know, when they're strapped, they'll go, "Oh, well, he won a big game for them last month."
Or he stopped. Yeah, he stopped
a losing streak. Or he had a big hit in the third inning against the Hanshin Tigers. You know, I'm going like, okay, well, that sounds like player of the month to me.
Yeah, if it was about stopping losing streaks, I think they said Hiroto Takahashi of the Dragons had stopped, you know, like five losing streaks in his win.
Well,
who doesn't if they win a game?
Yeah, that's an opportunity situation for Dragons pitchers. Everyone goes up there trying to stop losing streaks.
Well, I was going to say, if I get a spot start from the Dragons, I'm likely to stop a losing streak for them because that's all they do is have losing streaks. But I did want to give a couple guys some shout-outs here, too. I wanted to talk about Reyes of Nippon Ham and the hitting streak that he had. It got up to a club record 25 games. I wanted to go through and count the infield hits because I remember one.
Yep.
But I'm sure there might be a couple more. But 25 is incredible. He tied the club record with Hichori Morimoto and then Hiroshi Ohta from 1950.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was big for him. And I remember when he tied the record, he wanted the ball. They were at Beluda Dome out there in Saitama in Tokorozawa, and he wanted the ball. And I'm like, dude, get the ball when you break the record. You know, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, you just tied it, man. Just you know, get it when you break it. But he came back and actually broke the record. And then he had an 0-for-4, I believe, on Friday, because today is Saturday, to break the streak. But congratulations to him. And I just remembered the conversation that we had in the PL prediction special with Claudio Rodriguez, and Claudio pointed to the power, the massive power that Reyes was bringing. And I said, look, it doesn't matter if you don't make contact. And again, as we mentioned before, that Reyes said he's so glad he was able to spend some time on the farm and get used to the Japanese pitchers and get his timing down. And so congratulations to him. And what better timing than to get hot here in, you know, late August, September, when the team really needs you. And he's such a threat now in that lineup, and it really changes. And as you mention Kiyomiya also hitting really well during this stretch, and those two guys could really carry this team to unknown heights. I say unknown because they're going to have to overcome a team in the playoffs, most likely, if they don't win the pennant, and then the Hawks, who are in position to win the pennant, to get to the Japan Series. But if they're playing on something, anything close to this, and you have Ariel Martinez, who came on and hit a home run today as well, had a good game, that lineup, it just changes the dynamic of that lineup. It makes a lot, makes pitchers have to work a lot harder to get through it. And even Daigo Kamikawabata has been playing well. So it seems like there are a number of guys really producing in that lineup. Looks really dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is an accurate presentation of the lineup. I mean, just Kiyomiya and all the other guys. I mean, it's not just those two, and it's
or
not
three,
just Ariel Martinez and Yuatamiya and Yuya. It's not what is
yeah, Yuya Gunji.
Yuya Gunji. So all the names that are the most difficult to pronounce seem to be consolidating in Sapporo, but you know, more power to them.
Yep. All right, we won't be going rocking with Roki this week because he's pitching on Sunday. Now, didn't I go through and nudge the Marines to get Roki like on Fridays or Saturdays and get him off of Sundays? And that worked for a while, but I guess they have been listening to the show, so I'm gonna.
They
got their priorities mixed up.
Yeah, I think what they realize, they're so used to you that they feel they're married to you.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, I speak married.
Apparently they heard that.
I can explain it to them in a way they'll understand. So anyway, Roki, I noticed that he didn't pitch on Thursday, and then obviously he didn't pitch on Friday, so I thought today, make sure to check, because I bet he's going to pitch on Sunday, because I didn't hear about him going down to the farm or anything for any fatigue or
lack of upper body fitness or something.
Whatever excuse thing that they write on there.
Yeah, exactly. Excuse A.
Yeah. So
upper body excuse A, yes.
Yeah.
But I think the thing with Roki is that with Dallas Keuchel, they apparently adopted the Trevor Bauer usage routine.
Yes, I was going to mention that last time didn't get an opportunity. But
so yeah, he has been working on four days rest, and then everybody else has been shoved around to accommodate him.
Did you say shoved?
Well, you know, adjusted.
No, you already said it, man. It's out there.
Fine.
You, come here. Move. Get your butt over there.
Now you're making a mountain out of a peanut brittle or something. I'm trying to mix metaphors today. Okay. Anyway, so they've been adjusting their rotation, and they also didn't have a full week of games this week, so. Yeah, it seems that's where Roki ended up. But they're also the Marines. I heard Atsuki Tanaichi has got an arm issue or something, which is maybe upper body fitness excuse B.
Yeah, poor condition. That's the phrase I was looking for. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Poor condition.
So he may be a factor in there. We don't know what's going on. Well, you know, what's new with Lotte this year? They've been peddling. They've been selling what's going. We don't know what's going on at the team gift shop.
Yikes!
special for Team 26. And speaking of Team 26, Steve at Love Marines had a wonderful comment that I think starting in September, the Marines said, all you Team 26 people, all you paying members of Team 26 who've got coupons left that admit you to games this year, sit on them, because we're not going to accept them anymore. We're good without you.
Wow.
So So they're treating their fan, their wonderful fans the way they treat reporters this year. So how am I, so how am I not surprised?
How's that for your fan service?
Exactly.
Self-service. All right.
Exactly, pretty much.
All right. So we got one more segment before we sign off tonight, and I'm going to call this one Romancing the Zone.
Oh, okay. You did do your homework. What do you know?
I told you you would like it. So
you, know, you said I'd laugh.
Oh, well, laugh it like. What's the difference? Anyway,
as we move okay, on. Now you got me. Now I'm laughing.
Okay. All right. So Jim went through pitches and counts and the Yomiuri Giants, and I referenced this early in the show, I think in the opening. So
indeed. Yeah, so yeah. I just wanted to give a shout out to a university professor in Queensland, Australia, Dimitri, for asking me to provide Japanese baseball data for his graduate students in data science.
Shout out.
Exactly. So thanks for that, Dimitri. And one of his grad students is doing her master's thesis on called Balls and Strikes in Japanese Professional Baseball.
That's beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. Standing ovation.
Okay. Yeah. So that's great. And as far as I can tell, we spoke on Tuesday for the first time, and as far as I can tell from the limited look I had at her work, she more or less confirmed that there is something very strange about how often Yomiuri Giants pitchers get called first strikes in Japan, and also noticed that the minute NPB said, we're going to be watching you umpires with cameras, that edge shrank noticeably.
Ooh, scared of the bright lights?
Yeah, scared of accountability.
That's the only thing I
can
think of to say.
But I believe that has dissipated. I think NPB got off that wagon. They went off that one the way MLB did when they introduced pitch tracking software and said they were going to evaluate umpires' strike zone judgments, because they got off of that one quickly too. Mm. So anyway, it appears to be creeping back. And I found, so she had done something, and I'm not going to spoil her research because it's still a work in progress, but she looked at what happens with runners in scoring position. And she only looked at the Central League. And so I thought, okay, I'll look at the Central League. And one of the things I noticed, and this is, I wrote about this in my blog, and I'm going to say it was the NPB News for September 2nd.
Okay. It
might have been September 4th. Wouldn't have been September. So September 4th. And basically what I found was, I've found in my work, is that there's a relationship between how often teams, how often batters poke, they all, how often they offer at a pitch in a certain count, and how often that team's pitchers get called strikes.
Okay.
So basically, the closer you are to the zone, the more often batters swing and the more often you get called strikes.
Makes sense.
Okay. It's not a huge correlation. It's a 0.28 correlation, which is better than nothing. There's an effect. It's not the whole effect. But anyway, the riddle is, how come the Giants get more called first strikes in Japanese baseball than any other team in the, or I should say more than any other team in the Central League by a huge margin, when batters don't swing at their first strikes very often? It's a riddle that I don't know. And I am, you know, again, I did ask an umpire once, and he said, oh, that's because Giants pitchers are good. So they throw pitches that nobody wants to swing at, but the umpires want to call them strikes.
That's why I said romancing the zone, baby.
Okay, so
get
there's
close.
That. And
that's
if
enough.
you are a Hanshin Tigers fan and you're in the mood to be annoyed,
and in a mood
to have something to complain about,
Miffed.
About how the world is treating you unfairly, and you guys, you know who I'm talking about.
Nothing sexier than a miffed Tigers fan. But
yeah, I tell you, you know who I'm talking about. Yeah, have a look at that and you'll have something to whine about.
There you go. All right. All right. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. First strikes, and they don't seem to be around the plate, but they get a lot of called first strikes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Yakult Swallows get a huge amount of first strikes too, but they also, batters swing at their first pitches far more than any other team in the Central League because they're pounding the zone. That's what they do.
All right. Interesting stuff. We'll check it out on Jim's blog. I had one note as well. This is the season in September when we start to get surprise announcements about players retiring. So I had a dream when I was in the States in August here, and I told Jim about it. And I said, Jim, I had a dream that Yudai Ono of the Chunichi Dragons retired. And I sent Jim a message and I said, he didn't retire, did he? I didn't see anything about it. You know, I was in the States. Mm. And he said, no, I didn't hear anything about it. I don't think he's retiring. But it's somebody I wouldn't be surprised if he gets to the end of the season, because the injury thing is a part of it, right? It's because you get older and you can't recover as quickly. And not many can hang around like Masahiro Yamamoto of the Dragons did.
Sure.
And just pitch a quarter of the season or something akin to what we're seeing with the Los Angeles Dodgers and Clayton Kershaw. And he has been taking the second half of the season off a lot of seasons recently. And this year he took the whole first half of the season off, and he's off, I believe, on the injured list again. And these guys are getting older, and that's part of it, is that you're getting older. So the two guys, I think, I wouldn't be surprised at all to hear that they're finally saying goodbye. And I'm sure Jim is thinking along with me now that I bring this up. One, Masanori Ishikawa of the Yakult Swallows, and the other, Takumi Kuriyama of the Sabre Lions. So I'm not sure about
Ono. That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Ono. I think he's still fairly young and can pitch, but I wouldn't be surprised if he said, you know what, these injuries are really nagging me and I'm not pitching the way I want to. I'm not operating at the level I'd like to be, and I don't want to go out at a lower level, so I'm done. So let's keep an eye on these announcements as they come. I'm sure they'll start to come as soon as this show drops, because everyone will hear me talking about it.
Well, that's John Moves Worlds. Well, maybe, hold on, maybe John moves around the world. Maybe I got that mixed up.
Not even that much. Yeah. All right. Apologies. We're not going to be able to get to this question this week, but we won't plan that much next week so that we can get to the question that's on deck. So please be patient. Anyone who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on x.com @JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat, or go to the Facebook page and leave us a message there. I will go out and do my best to get some interviews this week so that we can keep this train moving. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter @JBW Podcast and @JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.